everybody. Thank you. Thank you for your generosity in allowing me to stumble every once in a while. I appreciate the opportunity to be a little vulnerable with y'all. So in October of 2019, I was newly ordained and mourning the loss of my significant other. And I was living in Baltimore at the time, and a friend had offered to take me sailing. It was this time of year. He had docked his boat in Annapolis for the summer and was sailing it back down the Chesapeake into Baltimore Harbor. It was a clear, sunny day with plenty of wind to fill the sails. Now, over the course of the day, my sad heart gladdened. I was grateful for the opportunity to be out of my house on such a beautiful day. I was grateful to be with a friend who was giving me the gift of his company and a stress-free day on the water. I was grateful for the butterfly that visited us along the way in the middle of the Chesapeake Bay, a monarch butterfly, a messenger from beyond. That's my story. That night, driving me back to my car, my friend asked me a question that I wasn't prepared to answer. "Who is God for you?" he said. "You just got ordained, right? Who is God for you?" I was taken aback. I was like, oh. I remember feeling as though I should have had a ready-made answer for that. I worried that my answer, whatever it was going to be, wouldn't be good enough for him. I even worried that the wrong answer would call my worthiness to be a minister into question. In the silence that ensued, I imagined, God bless you, I imagine God standing in the doorway, right? Like tapping her foot as if saying, "Well, answer him. I'm waiting." And I mulled it over a few different answers and finally realized that my first answer was the right one. At least it was the right one for me. God is love. And with that, we continued to ride in silence. Enough said. Case closed. Which reminds me of another story, an incident that happened just last week. I was in an interfaith ministers meeting at which one of my colleagues professed that the thing that ties our congregations together is that we all believe in God. And recognizing that she had likely not had any recent encounters with UUs in that group, I laughed and I decided to hold my tongue until we adjourned, at which time I let her know that not all of us minister to folks who believe in God. To which she replied, "That's okay, we're all human beings and we all need love. End of story. And if it's not, maybe it should be." Love is a pathway forward for so many things that have absolutely nothing to do with religion or what we think God is. Love has to do with our ability to age gracefully, create meaningful and lasting relationships, be successful as entrepreneurs, or work as social justice warriors to create racial equity, activism and allyship, self-determination, and connection with our highest power, communion with the God of our understanding, whoever that is, or not. The bottom line is that love is the necessary ingredient for a fully expressed spirit and a life that occurs as meaningful and impactful. 1 Corinthians 13 says, "If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing." All over this country, religious institutions are losing membership. Young people and families with young people do not come in the numbers that they once did. And the generation of builders born pre-1950s who found purpose and fulfillment in building institutions are no longer able to sustain their previous levels of zeal. We got that. These are the facts. We do what we can until we cannot. A 2018 Pew Research Center study on why Americans go or don't go to religious services offers further fodder for my sermon this morning. 37% of U.S. adults who attend religious services a few times a year or less often say they practice their faith in other ways, effectively making church and religious institutions irrelevant for them. In the survey, more than half of the respondents that regularly attend religious services cited to become closer to God as their primary reason. No other reason survey respondents gave came close to this. And although that is not likely the reason why people embrace UU, it is more of an issue than we might admit. People want to feel connected to a power greater than themselves. It gives them purpose, it gives them identity, it gives them hope. 1 out of 10 unchurched millennials senses that legitimate doubt is prohibited in churches, in religious institutions, starting at the front door. More than half said they did not gain any significant or new insights regarding faith when they last attended church. 1 in 20 say they attend religious services primarily to be part of a community of faith. And 1 in 10 reports going to church because they are looking for community. Community equals connection. Community equals belonging. Community equals engagement. Community equals love. And we do well to walk intentionally along this path. And yet, we who consider ourselves steeped in a social justice consciousness may look upon this guidance as a redundant or even stale, right? Beloved community is what we are all about. But often, we think that what we have already done precludes us from having to be available for the next wave of need. And honestly, that sounds pretty good to me. Being a caretaker of 90-year-old parents that gave their lives to the movement, I need to remind them frequently and to the other UU builder generations of folks who raised me that they don't need to carry the load. But what does that mean for any number of aging congregations of social justice warriors like this one that wants to stay relevant? What does that mean for a UU faith community that just updated its principles and put love squarely in the middle of everything we stand for? In the middle of justice, in the middle of equity, in the middle of transformation, in the middle of pluralism, in the middle of generosity, love in the middle of interdependence. In our shared covenantal journeys, we are accountable to one another for doing the work of living our shared values through the spiritual discipline of love. For more than a decade, Side with Love used to be Standing on the Side of Love. Our Side of Love campaign has been an outlet for Unitarian Universalists to embody unconditional universal love as a foundation and grounding for our actions in the world. We strive to be of service to our communities and advocate for change on local and state and national and international levels, not news. Through our Side with Love campaign, we amplify the voices of the oppressed through online media. We show up in partnership at justice events across the country. We lobby national leaders on immigration reform and racial justice, equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. We support religious freedom and so much more. Above all, we work to make love real in the world. In this sleepy rural community of Mohegan Lake, I wonder what good trouble we might get into. I ask us to contemplate the question, what do our hearts want? What does love want us to do or be such that we are known for that love? Where is love calling us, and what is the work that is yet ours to do? What and who do we love so much that we can't help but take action? I commend us all for staying awake and aware, and yet there is still work to do. Recalling back to several months ago when this congregation called me to be your minister to help you lean toward deeper listening and towards reinvention and growth, I chose to trust the universe and just step into the unknown. Across the country, divisive political rhetoric, socioeconomic strategies, and oppressive systems use fear to keep love at bay, to keep us from engaging with each other, to make us doubt our own humanity. Daily, we learn of another heinous act of violence, and I, for one, find myself battling my own cynicism. Daily, I wonder, is there anything we can really do to stem the tide of fear that has taken a foothold? Sadly, I don't think we're learning from our mistakes, or at best, we are learning far too slowly to be effective. Rather than share resources, we continue to go to war with each other, creating false narratives based on fear and ignorance. At this point, I invite us to take a collective breath, breathe in love, breathe out fear. Last week in an online schools facilities meeting in Tarrytown, someone repeatedly entered racial slurs into the chat section. The perpetrator was ejected from the meeting, and the police and DA's office were informed that a hate crime was committed. As co-chair of the Human Rights Advisory Committee in Greenberg, I learned of it when someone included me in an email. Otherwise, I would not have known that anything had happened. The superintendent drafted a letter of response to the community condemning the act and committing to hold police accountable for following up on this individual. I invited several folks to write letters of support. But what else is there to do? Hatred and fear go hand in hand. Anger and fear, meanness and fear, separation and fear. I know this, you know this. And as Pollyanna as it sounds, I also know that every fearmonger out there just needs to know that they are loved and safe. No one is coming to get you. Unfortunately, our culture tells us that fear is the best way to maintain power. Fear keeps people off balance. Fear causes people to make irrational choices. Fear leads to betrayal. Love is the only way to heal. Love and acts of love are the growing edge that we need to cultivate. I say again, God is love. And truly, no matter what we believe in, loving each other is the work that we are called to do. Whatever that looks like, we need to do it, and do it often, fiercely. Because fear is so primal, we need to lean into love with commitment and ongoing diligence, and most of all, courage. Breathe in love. Breathe out fear. In my bedroom hangs a banner that lists all the sacred text renditions of the words of Jesus on the Sermon of the Mount, in his Sermon on the Mount. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. This admonition appears in each of the world's sacred texts. This is our covenant. love each other such that the love we share transforms ourselves, our congregation, our communities, and our world. In the words of the late Lakota Ceremonial Chief Frank's Fool's Crow, I messed up his name, let me start that again. Frank Fool's Crow. Survival of the world depends on sharing what we have and working together. If we don't, the whole world will die. First the planet, and then the people. Let us not grow stagnant. We are seeing the death of our planet and our people. It behooves us who understand that the primary language of God is love to do more in the name of love, to risk having our hearts broken by failure or disappointment in order to alleviate as much suffering as we can, to offer as much aid as we can, to lift as many boats as we can, to express as much love into the world as we possibly can while we are alive. God does not require that we engage in the rigors of religious practice, nor does God require that we align with a faith tradition. God requires that we share ourselves fully with the world in a way that honors our presence here, that aligns with our divine purpose, to love and to love and to love and to love. In closing, I'd like to share a poem by Carrie Holly Hurt, Love Holds You. Love holds you. Love bears witness to all your inherent dignity and worthiness. It witnesses how you try, succeed, and fail, and it does not flinch. Love will not let you go. Love holds all of you. Let love hold us in place this morning. Let love enfold us in delight. Let love guide us in all things. Let us give thanks for the love that is at the center of our faith and open our hearts to all that is good, all that is kind, and all that is true. Amen. So at this